It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. According to the Alzheimer's Association, between the years 2000 and 2008, deaths from Alzheimer's increased by 66%, while every other major cause of death decreased.
By 2050, the incidence of Alzheimer's is expected to quadruple worldwide.
The thought of memory loss among the elderly can be scary, and for children and friends who care for them, the idea can be really overwhelming.
Our next guest is an award-winning poet who took care of her mother for a decade as she passed into dementia. The task was demanding, but she also describes the experience as a gift. Jeannie Murray Walker is a professor of English at Delaware University, and her book is called The Geography of Memory, A Pilgrimage Through Alzheimer's. Jeannie, thanks for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you call this a pilgrimage. Some people who are caring for people with Alzheimer's think of it as it's treading water. You're in a waiting game, waiting to see what's going to happen. Your life is on hold. But you describe it as a pilgrimage, something that brings to mind the spiritual and also moving forward. Why do you use that word?
For exactly the reasons that you mentioned. It isn't just, for me, I think, while I was going through the experience, it was kind of like an endless repetitive slog. Which can be the way it feels when you're, moving in the water, but you don't know exactly which direction or where you're going. It was in looking back that I began to realize that it was actually a journey, or that it was actually a way of moving towards something. I think that part of the problem with Alzheimer's is you can't always tell exactly when it starts. And you certainly don't know the end point, because with each person who experiences the disease, it's different. And so for the caretaker, without any real clear beginning and without any clear end point, it seems like sometimes it's just a repetitive slog. But it is, if you look back at it from several years' vantage point, it's a little easier to see the markers along the way.
Well, it's interesting because you describe it not just as a gift, but at one point you describe it as a spectacular gift that you couldn't have gotten any other way. Tell us a little bit about how you learned to recognize this experience, which a lot of people associate with pain and loss, as a gift.
Well, there were a number of payoffs, I think, and consolations, or you can call them gifts, which is what I did in the book. One of them was that I reconnected with my mother. We had never had a serious break. I just went to graduate school and began a career and had a family and lived in a different part of the country. And we saw each other twice a year, possibly, or sometimes some years it was only once a year. But I began to see her a lot more frequently when it was clear that she was having some trouble with her paying her bills, for example, and keeping track of items around the house. I began to fly to visit her, and ultimately I used to go sometimes six times a year, and I would spend 5 days at a time with her, the weekend, a long weekend. So I reconnected with my mother, and that was just really wonderful. I think if that hadn't happened, I'd have always wondered a bit what she was all about, because in many ways we had quite different ideas and different senses of what the world was like. For starters, she didn't want me to read. She used to say when I was a teenager reading all the time, "You will come to no good."
And now you're a poet and a professor.
Yeah. Well, that made it easy to separate from her. All I had to do was love Shakespeare. But one of the other gifts that I got was reconnecting with a sister. And again, my sister lived in the same city as my mother lived in. And again, I did not have any quarrel with her at all. It's just that we had both gone in our own direction. She became the head of the volunteer center in Dallas. And of course, I've got this career writing in a whole different part of the country, in Philadelphia. And so every time I went to Dallas to see my mother, I saw my sister. And my mother became a project for the two of us. I mean, we collaborated. When I was looking back, when I finally got the idea of writing this book, we exchanged over 1,000 emails and many, many, many phone calls, and strategized and chose doctors and argued a lot, frankly, but ultimately came to a very deep understanding and bond. And that was truly wonderful. And then another thing that was, you might call a gift, is when you're taking care of somebody who's slowing down, even an aged parent, it doesn't have to be somebody with dementia, you have to walk more slowly, you have to slow down, you don't get as many chances to be on email or Facebook or whatever it is. Well, I was with my mother. I didn't do any of that stuff. She didn't have a connection in her facility. And so I was forced to slow down. And slowing down in that way, I think, caused me to pay more attention to everything from the way food tasted to the way flowers look, to the way things grew, to my mother, you know, and my sister. So, yeah, I did gain some wonderful things, which I still have. And I think one of the reasons I wrote the book was to try to change the Alzheimer's discussion a little bit, because I think it's perhaps a little more grim than, in fact, was my experience of it.
You tell a story at the beginning of the book about going to your mother's house and realizing that her freezer was completely stocked with ham, and she didn't eat ham. Was that sort of the beginning of your acknowledgement that maybe something wasn't right, and the beginning of what would become this long journey?
Yeah, I think that was. You just pick up an increasing tempo of these things that are not like your parent. And somewhere along the way, I had that realization. It might have been then. There were also disorganized drawers. My mother was she was a nurse, and she was the kind of person who'd line up paper clips in her drawer. And when you look in the drawer of somebody like that, and it's total chaos, you say, what's going on? But we, of course, didn't ever get a diagnosis. So although she was in an Alzheimer's unit, you know, you have to kind of put two and two together, and it's hard to remember when I go back exactly what it was when I said something is really seriously wrong.
Usually people think about Alzheimer's, and it seems to be the gradual slipping away of the personality that you knew, the person who knew how to do things in a certain way and that you associate, you know, with mom or with dad. But in your book, you talk about actually getting to know your mother sort of more deeply than you might have done before, and also getting to know yourself more deeply. How did that happen?
Well, I viewed my mother's strange comments in the way that you might view a theater script. I had known her well enough as a child and an adolescent so that I knew what she was thinking about and how she talked at different stages of her life. And she seemed like characters that she had been before, so that although she didn't always make sense in the environment that we were in at the time, I could kind of connect what she was saying with her past. And I really read a lot of what she said as metaphor.
And what about you? So you got to know the way she talked and you understood these former selves of her. But what about you? How did it teach you to get reintroduced to yourself, and especially a younger self?
Well, when she would talk as if she was 40 years old, then I would have been maybe 12 at the time or something, you know, and so I would be thrust back into those periods. And I began to remember some of my own history, which I had never really taken time to reflect on. And I might have been able to do that if I had had more time, but it was really the presence of my mother's past selves that allowed me to kind of re-inhabit some of my own old selves. And so I remembered these events that had happened to me, and it really shone a light on my own personal development.
Well, we're talking right now with Jeannie Murray Walker, an award-winning poet and professor of English at the University of Delaware. We're talking about her book called The Geography of Memory, about her mother's passage into dementia. And she says that while this was difficult, it was also a gift. And we'd like to hear your thoughts. What has your experience been taking care of a friend or a parent with Alzheimer's? What was that like for you? Were you able to see a silver lining in the midst of all the loss and the struggle? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
In just a moment, we'll take a look at the headlines. Then we'll be back and hear some of your stories caring for someone with dementia. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back with poet and University of Delaware English professor Jeannie Murray Walker. We're talking about her new memoir of her mother's passage into dementia called The Geography of Memory. And Murray Walker says it was, of course, difficult taking care of her mother, but she's also talking about some of the gifts that she got along the way. And we'd like to hear your thoughts.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you taken care of someone with dementia? A parent, maybe. 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org.
And let's go right to the phones. We have Teresa joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Therese.
Good afternoon. I helped my dad take care of my mother for 7 years, both when she was at home and then after when she went into a nursing home. And while I understand your guest's perspective about gifts, I think most of the people I've talked to who've dealt with this we're talking about a lot of stress. We're talking about care issues and inadequate care for in-home and nursing home care. We're talking about financial issues. We're talking about the emotional stress. Alzheimer's manifests itself differently in different people. You know, you've got some people with wandering issues, others who are not able to speak, which was one of my mother's first symptoms, not finding words, and then very early losing speech. So I would say that overall, it's a very stressful and difficult disease. It's fortunate when you're able to get a few, but I really think that it's a devastating disease for families, and that cannot be overlooked. And many people who have parents that are far away don't have the luxury of traveling that frequently to see them, and then there's the added stress of being far away. So I do really appreciate the perspective, and I did experience a few gifts along the way, but I would say by and large, there's no other way to cut it except to say devastation. And what our generation, my generation, the baby boom generation, our kids are in for if we don't find a cure, I think is unknown to the public at large.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts, Therese. And Therese talking about that it is devastating and there's no way around it, even if we look for and sometimes find gifts, this is a hard road.
It sure is. It's a very complex story. And I think the narrative that I tell in The Geography of Memory registers all those terrible dilemmas that Therese is talking about. The problem of finding caretakers, the problem of watching your parent, sort of not exactly disintegrate. It's the holding together of the personalities, you know, that seems to be disintegrating, and the grief that involves. It's really, I think, pretty clear in almost all the books written about Alzheimer's how devastating it is. And I think it also has the power to blow families to smithereens. The siblings quarrel because they get exhausted and they do have financial problems and issues. At some points, I think for some of us, we have to either use the money to send our kids to college or to take care of our parents. And it's an awful choice. So all of that is in the book. I wanted to see if I could also introduce some of the things that happen to us which can be gifts. So it's a complex story to tell.
Well, how did you deal with some of those stresses that were there, you know, despite the things that you found that were sustaining? There was, you know, anytime someone has Alzheimer's, there's a lot there that is going to take a toll. How do you suggest that people cope with some of the stresses and the pain that goes along?
Well, if you can work it out with your sibling, it helps a lot. I think it's harder to be an only child. The two of us, there were two of us, two sisters, did not always agree. In fact, we had some incredible arguments, which are, you know, told about, and the book tells about those. But in the end, the two of us together were able to develop a bond because we were, I think, careful of our relationship and worked it out together, and that bond has survived. The other thing that we did that I think maybe helped us was we got our kids involved. Both my sister and I had, each of us had two children, and they came. Sometimes they weren't so crazy about it, but they came and helped with the moving. They came. It was fantastic to have that younger generation helping us. It was great for our spirits, I think.
Well, I want to get one more call, and we've only got a couple of minutes left here. Let's go to Lynn in Boulder Junction. Hi, Lynn, you're on the air.
Hi.
What is your story?
I would like to say that I understand and I appreciate what the previous callers are saying about how difficult it is, and especially for in our experience of dealing with my father in the early stages where there's the anger issues, with the loss of control and the losing the driving privileges. That was difficult to deal with. And then and trying to reason with someone, it just doesn't work. But we went to the support group meetings, and they were wonderful. And I think I have to say we had a great time. We laughed a lot. We looked for the humor in everything and just the sheer joy of, you know, spending that time. And whether, you know, you might lose the intelligence and that sort of tracking, but you don't lose your feelings and you don't lose your heart. It was one of my greatest privileges.
Okay, thank you so much for your thoughts, Lynn. And Jeannie, what would you say in the last minute or so to the experience that Lynn had?
Well, I love that. I mean, I think that also is she sort of encapsulated what happened with us. We laughed a lot. Actually, the book is quite funny. And I think part of it has to do with the disconnects. I learned when I was with my mother to just take it as given. If she said we were on an elevator to the 17th floor, I pressed the button to the 17th floor, you know. And that makes everything lighter than it would be if you were trying to reason her back, no, we're standing in your kitchen, Mother.
Well, Jeannie, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us and for being here today.
It's been a pleasure.
That was Jeannie Marie Walker, award-winning poet and professor of English at the University of Delaware. And you can continue the conversation, maybe share your own experience on the Central Time Facebook page. Jeannie's book is called The Geography of Memory.